Welcome, listeners, to another amazing, fantastic bonus episode of Oh My Word. It's been a week or two or three maybe since we've had a bonus episode, but trust me, this is going to be so worth it. We have an incredibly special guest with us here today. Her name is Stacia Deutsch, and she is the author of, like, everything. Not exactly everything, but many, many things. And so that's why we're so excited to have her here, that she was able to squeeze us in to her schedule. So, Stacia, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much. I'd like to be the author of everything. But there are limits to what I can do.
Right. It's like having a theory of everything, so we'll just have, like, the author of everything. We've anointed you.
I'll put that on my business cards.
Awesome. Great. So Stacia has actually written for, you've written across the kid lit spectrum for, yeah. I know, young adult, middle grade chapter books, or like how far across do we go on that?
So I have written, most of my stuff is chapter book, which would be about 7 to 11 year old. That's like probably 98% of what I've written, and a little bit older. But my sweet spot tends to be those 7 to 11-year-olds. I've written at least one YA. And in the olden days, I wrote an adult novel, but no one knows about that.
Yeah.
And the one thing I can't seem to conquer, though, is the picture book world. So if there are some picture book writers out there that want to toss me some advice, every time I send one over to my agent, she's like, no, not this one. Sorry. I think it's just the brevity of words. Like, I tend to be super chatty. I don't know. My characters are chatty. I'm chatty. I like description. And my picture book ideas turned out to be, 70 pages. I just can't cut it down.
That's actually interesting, because you think that someone, but I think you've got a few hundred books. You've got a few hundred books that you've published already, and it's just interesting. You think that, like, oh, whatever you do, it's automatically done. But it just shows you that picture books are much harder than people think they are. Yeah.
Oh, I so want people to think that.
Whatever perception you want, we'll just focus on it, and we'll just make, what do you want us to have people?
Awesome picture book ideas, and everybody should go for that. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, consider it done. Okay, great. So just to backtrack a second, or if you give us, okay, now that we know that brevity is not your thing, but if we could go for brevity a little bit, how did we get here? As in, how did you even get into writing, especially for kids? How did we get to this point?
Yeah, so this is not my first career. I was actually ordained a Reform rabbi in Judaism. And it's a lot of grad school. That's 5 years of graduate school. Plus, I was working after that in a congregation. And I liked it, but now when I look back and I can say, okay, what pieces did I like about it? I loved the stories and the Bible stories and the tradition stories, and I can kind of see where I evolved. But at the time, all I knew was that I also had three small children, and we were reading Harry Potter out loud, and we were reading Magic Treehouse out loud at night. And I kept coming up with this idea that just kept, like, popping into the back of my head. My very first idea was about kids that time travel and meet famous people in American history. A little Magic Treehouse-ish, but a little bit longer, and I wanted more meat to the story, and I didn't want to have to go out and buy a separate research guide. And I had never written a novel. I had no idea. Like, it's just this idea. And I called a friend of mine, and I was like, hey, I've got this idea, and I just can't shake it. Like, these kids time travel, and they're going to meet people in history. And it was right after 9/11, and America was really looking inward, like, why are we special? What makes Americans special? And I thought, I could focus it on American history, try and teach a little bit more. I thought my kids would like it. And my friend Rhody Cohan at the time was like, it's a great idea. She's like, I'll do the research for you. Like, you write it, I'll do all the research. You won't have to even, like, pick up an encyclopedia.
Wow.
At the time. And I was like,
yeah.
So we literally had no idea what we were doing. I joined the SCBWI, the Society of Children Book Writers and Illustrators, and I started going to the local conferences just to meet people. And then we met in Las Vegas. She was in Arizona at the time, and I was here in California. And we met in Las Vegas, and we opened children's books. And we literally counted how many words are in a sentence, how many sentences are in a paragraph, where does the period go? Does it go inside the quotation mark or outside the quotation mark? Like, we went and we bought kids' graded spelling lists. And we were like, okay, if this is the grade we're going to write for, how do we do it? And we taught ourselves by looking at everybody else's books how to write a book.
Right.
We wrote 3 original Blast to the Past books, which weren't called that at the time. And then we had 3 manuscripts, and we were ready to figure out what happens next. Back to SCBWI, where everybody who wants to learn anything about children's books should be joining and going, because they taught us everything we needed to know.
Right. And then you got an agent right away from those books, or there was a...
Oh, you would think, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Awesome idea. Awesome writers. No. It never works like that, right?
Right, exactly, but yeah.
One of the most important lessons that I've learned through this process, and I hope that any of your listeners who are interested in writing, or basically existing, it's about connections and who you know, and asking those people who you know who they know, and being kind and generous and hoping that people will connect you and following up a million billion times.
Yeah.
So Blast to the Past, we sent it out to agents. We got so many rejections, so many. I used to keep the box of them all, I finally got rid of them, but this huge thick box of 4 inches of papers and rejections, and I print them off and save them.
Right.
Make myself really feel terrible. But I met someone who said, "Oh, my nephew is an agent. You should send it to him." And it turned out he wasn't.
Oh.
He was actually he worked at a speakers bureau where they had authors, and then they would place them in high-profile speaking engagements.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But he was willing to read it, and then he passed it to one of the agents who came through his door, and that agent picked us up. But I will tell you, on the other side, Rhodey knew somebody who knew somebody who was a sister of an editor at Simon & Schuster.
Wow.
Kind of through that line, Rhodey managed to convince the sister to convince her sister to take a look at it.
Right.
So he connected the agent and the editor. And that was our first entry into it. But again, you think, oh, that's so easy, oh, great, you got an agent, and then you got an editor, and wahoo.
Yeah.
The editor didn't want, our very first book was about the Wright brothers.
Okay.
The kids time travel, and they meet the Wright brothers, and the Wright brothers are going to quit building the plane, because, building stuff is really, really hard,
yeah.
And flying is super hard. And,
yeah.
And they're going to quit, and that was kind of the theme of the book, and we thought, oh, it's We were 6 months out from the Wright brothers' 100th anniversary. We thought, this is great.
Right, right.
Or the 100th anniversary of first flight. But what we didn't realize is, those slates are full 2 years in advance.
Yes, yes.
We had no idea. Another thing we just didn't know about the publishing industry. So we got asked if we... I'm telling you this long story, right? we got asked if we would like to redo the book, and Simon & Schuster was interested in a book about... President Lincoln instead.
Right, right.
So Rhodey and I had to decide, do you scrap your entire book and start over?
Yeah.
With no promise of payment, no promise of publishing, no promise of anything, or do we try and keep going on the Wright brothers and see if anybody out there was interested? And
right.
We made the choice that Simon & Schuster had asked us to revise it, and even on the chance they said no, we would do it.
Wow.
But we got lucky, and they ended up with 8 books in that series. So that was really exciting.
8 books. Wow. Right. And the Wright brothers?
Blast to the Past, yeah.
Did you end up with any of the... I saw them. I thought I only saw 6. Are any of them the Wright brothers? Or you didn't even... That whole manuscript
nope.
was scrapped.
I have an awesome Wright brothers book. If anybody wants to read it, it's under my bed or on my laptop. Maybe someday. But now you think, okay, well, that one has to be written because it's about their first... time travel adventure. The whole thing kind of changed and evolved in time, so.
Right.
I've got an awesome Wright brothers book that nobody seems to want.
Right.
Amongst many, many others that no one seems to want. So,
wow. Wow.
Added to the collection that my children will get upon my demise.
Yeah, all the posthumous printings that they're going to do. Yeah. So after that, though, in addition to that, I think you have other history series as well, in addition to that one. Did I see that correctly?
So sort of. I can kind of give you the trajectory because I feel like I'm in a really weird place in publishing.
Right.
Where I am, and for those of you who look at my website at www.stasiadeutsch.com, you'll see. And I think I have 300 books.
Yeah, wow.
It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I like to say they're short. They're really short. Some of them are even super short.
Yeah. Well, how the link is going to be in the episode notes for anyone who wants to check it out.
Okay, cool. That would be great. That's helpful. But this weird place that I fell into is the licensed publishing. So after we finished, I don't know, we were like maybe two or three books into Blast of the Past, the editor said to me that the woman in the room next door to her was looking for somebody to write Nancy Drew. I ever written a mystery? Right. Well, honestly, I had never written anything other than like sermons as a rabbi in Blast of the Past, right?
Right.
And I'm like, we write mysteries all the time. Like, love that. Like, Googling, like, what is a red herring? Like, sure, what is the tone of my voice? Like, yeah. So Rody and I continued to work together. Like, the parameters of what we were doing changed a little bit because there was no historical research for her to be feeding me.
Right.
But we ended up, maybe 8 Nancy Drew in the Clue Crew, which is a young, again, like that sweet spot, like 7-year-olds, maybe even a little younger for Nancy Drew. And then once I hit this vein in licensed publishing, it was like this strange world opened to me.
Right. Right. Does that include like the Hotel Transylvania books and things like that? Yeah. That we're saying it's all in licensed?
All licensed. Yeah. So what happens is, the publishing houses, like, will be contracted by, I don't know, the movie company that's making Hotel Transylvania, right? And they'll need a book for the movie. And so once Nancy Drew just opened this door, which is funny because years and years and years before, I remembered seeing an ad in a magazine for Strawberry Shortcake. They needed an author for Strawberry Shortcake books. And I sent in my name, and I'd gotten this letter back that was like, well, without licensed experience, like, we can't hire you. And I thought, well, it's like this vicious circle. Like, how do you get licensed experience in licensed publishing if you've never had it? And like, But it turned out I kind of discovered this accidental way into it. So Nancy Drew, and just having my name attached on a licensed product, which is somebody else's character, sometimes it's somebody else's story that you're writing, somebody else's world, somebody else's universe. Like, all these things are already done for you in many ways. You're, like, writing somebody else's voice sometimes, right?
Right.
Once I fell into that, or once I had that in my pocket, other things started to open. So, let's say Nancy Drew, and then once I did Nancy Drew, I moved kind of into Boxcar Children novels, which are also like young mystery novels.
Right.
And then you start to meet those editors. And again, remember, like I talk about networking, like it's a continual process of keeping in touch with editors and making sure that you're connected and like sending resumes. And I send out resumes every 3 months. Every 3 months, I go back through my list and make sure all the editors are where they used to be. And I contact everybody and say, hey, what are you doing?
Wow.
But so the movie novelizations, which is all part of this world, right, came about, I'm going to say it in like great love. I knew Robin Glasser, who is the illustrator of Fancy Nancy. I just don't want everybody to be like, I got to call Robin Glasser. Connect her. Just not. Like, I knew her. Our kids have been in school together.
Right.
And so I knew her, and we went out together, and I had told her what I was doing. And she was working with HarperCollins at the time, and she recommended me for a movie novel. And the very first movie novel I did was Batman the Dark Knight.
Oh.
So it's like starting, like, with the Rolls Royce, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you kind of go backwards and you get like Smurfs 2, which is a stinker of a movie. But once I was in the movie novel business, that was a whole nother, like, way into this license publishing. And I mean, I will say license publishing is a weird game. You are playing in somebody else's sandbox.
Right.
And you have to be comfortable with that. And I often even forget to ask if my name goes on the book, and you have to be comfortable with that. And at some point, Rody decided that she wasn't.
Right.
Like, she wanted credit for the things that we were working on.
Right.
And we parted ways after a while. I mean, she also wanted to just leave writing. She wanted a more steady kind of income, right, which is something else we could always talk about. But she and I are still like best friends and talk 15 times a day, but she moved on and I continued in this world. And for me, licensed publishing means I know what the book's going to be. I often know what it's going to be about. I kind of have this like idea. It's very different than sitting in your room writing that first blast of the past book or that rainbow bunny book that you have in the back of your head that you've always wanted to write. You sit down at your computer because that's all you. I am playing in someone else's sandbox.
Right. So how does that work, let's say, either for the Batman or for Hotel Transylvania or Cloud of the Trance of Meatballs, I think I saw also. How much do you have to go and you have to sit through the films now? Do you have to see what other people have written about it, or you just take whatever they give you and work off of that? Or
oh, it's such a fun fantasy. I like to pretend like I'm part of the creatives, but I'm really not. They send me a script about a year in advance of when the movie's going to come out.
Okay.
And then I'm basically, the movie novels are like not like brain surgery. They, you're taking the language that's already in the script, the dialogue, and you're adding like prose and description around it, but you have no context for it. So you're basically guessing. You're saying, I don't know, the line is, Joker, you're surrounded, or whatever Batman says. I mean, I'm just making this up, right? Batman says, as he crashed through a window twice and bounced to his feet. You know, right. I have no idea. Is that going to be in the movie? Probably not. Not all. Maybe
right.
He just walks in the door. Maybe he's already, I don't know.
Right.
So you're often just guessing. Sometimes I could find stills. Rhodey's actually really good at the internet. She's like got special like power internet too. We could find stills, and sometimes like you find like the illegal ones that people took with their cell phone while they're on set.
Okay.
Sometimes the movie companies will send me pictures at least of characters so you can sort of describe them. But often you're just guessing. And then it's super fun. When you finish the whole book, you've like finished transcribing the whole script, and they're like, oh, you didn't get the new script? last week we rewrote the whole thing. You're like, cool.
Yeah, love it. Yeah. So you're kind of, you're taking the screenplay and just flushing it out into novel length is basically.
Yeah, basically is what you're doing. Yeah, and I love doing movie novelizations, and then they show up at the school scholastic fairs, or like they often come out weeks before the movies because the kids like to read them, and kids like to follow the dialogue along with the movies. And I do love to fantasize that I'm part of like the creative process of the, and that they're all going to invite me to the Academy Awards.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So it's really like. It's basically a marketing tool, the same way that they put out the serial with the characters on it. They're putting out the book with the characters on it to gear up to the film.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of, like,
oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
It's so fun. It's super fun, though. I mean, and it's fun to feel like I got the Ghostbusters, the new, like, female release of Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, a year before the movie came out. Like, that, it's awesome. You, like, sign all these non-disclosures, and you're, like, super top secret. You're, like, I know what's going to happen. Like, so fun.
It certainly makes writing a lot more glorious than just trudging around in your sweatpants and, like...
Yeah, exactly. You know, and in the meantime, you're lifting the dialogue out of the script. Exactly, word for word. You're like, right. Not super glamorous, but you know what? I'm, like, part of, like, the Ghostbusters.
Right.
Like, they know me.
Well, in your mind, is that a different kind of writing than the stuff that you're coming up with on your own? Or for you, it's just all just writing. One day we're writing this, one day we're writing that. It's just the way it goes.
That's a really interesting question. In some ways, it's all just writing. And for those of us who just love the process of writing, the movie novels are kind of fun, too, because you're analyzing somebody else's writing. Right? You want to make sure that it's not divided into chapters for you.
Okay.
So you want to make sure that you're ending each chapter on a cliffhanger, and that you're getting the conflict in the right places, and that you're climaxing right where the movie should have a climax.
Right.
And so you're kind of processing it through that way. Like, the first step for me is always to go through and try and break down the chapters. So there's like a learning process on it as well, kind of an overlay. Does that make it different that if I'm writing my own novel. I mean, in some ways, like, you're still creating setting, you're creating the world through language, right? So yeah, it's different. I mean, and there are parts of it that are super boring because you're transcribing. And often I get scripts that, like, you can't lift. Like, why they can't put everything into a writable PDF is, like, beyond me. Like, you're typing in the language from the script.
Oh, yeah.
This is so painful. But okay. That's what they want. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the script stuff is often very, a little bit different just in terms of that. You're not creating. And sometimes you watch it, you'd be like, ugh, they should not say this.
Right.
But, you know, I think that everything I write, anything any of us write, any writing is always worthy writing.
Right.
You know, if you're writing a letter, there's like something important to that, or an email. Like, I would never like, I don't know, turn down a possibility to write and learn and increase my skill. And probably if you looked at those early novels and then you look at what I write now, you'd be like, oh wow, like, she, you know, it's been 20 years, she's really grown. I'd like to think that, at least.
Yeah, for sure. That's the best thing about writing more than one thing, is that you do have that option for growing, for sure. Well, so I wonder.
Yeah, and you pick up different things from different styles, right? You'll definitely pick up different skills or different vocabulary or different ways to approach a character.
Right.
Everything I do is kind of part of my journey. That's good.
Yeah, that's true. So are you still a very avid reader, picking apart other children's books, seeing what other writers are doing? Or do you now read more broadly? No,
it depends. If I'm writing, let's say I'm writing a mystery novel, I will be very careful not to read mystery novels, because you don't ever want to be accused of lifting something from somewhere else.
Right.
And it's very hard not to cross-fertilize, right?
Right.
So if I'm in the middle of a project, I might read biography, or I might read, I love those things where, like, people just, like, memoir, I guess you call it, where they do one day at a time. Whatever they are. I love those kind of novels.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them out there where the people, like, wrote memoirs, I guess. I love those. And I do like biography. And, you know, and then if I'm doing a movie novel, I can read something else. But it is uncanny how many books I read that are written for, you know, 11-year-olds. A lot of them.
Yeah, it's like,
so
funny.
So any 11-year-olds out there, feel free to send me some things to read, because I don't read any of it.
Yeah, it's like, I guess when you find your sweet spot, you just... Well, because you have your one young adult novel, so is that an anomaly? Was that just something that just had to get out, or you didn't even think...
Yeah.
That was the idea that came and you wrote it, so that's it.
Yeah. It was an anomaly, and I'm not sure it's, like, my best work. It was... The editor on Blast of the Past moved on, and she was doing this romantic comedy line at Simon & Schuster, and asked if I'd be interested. And, I mean, obviously, I'm never... I think I never say no. I can probably count on one hand and three fingers the number of times that I've turned down something, even when my agent is like, this is a terrible deal. I'm like, oh, I'll do it. sure. okay, whatever. Yeah. Writing. So that was kind of an anomaly. Part of me would love to try and do more of those. I like a good romance novel. I like an adult romance novel. I don't know. Eyes meet across the room, young adult romance novel,
right,
too. So, and you don't get a lot of that in your 7-11s.
No, yeah, no, you don't. Yeah, exactly.
Nah. And it would kind of be gross if you did. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yes. Was that hard for you to go from writing for younger kids to writing young adult, because your word count almost triples on that, or is it just, you know, the words either come or they don't come, so it doesn't really matter what age group you're writing for? Do you remember the experience?
No,
anything
it's
like
not
that?
Just word count, it's vocabulary.
Right, oh yeah, right.
Oh my gosh, I find, like, sometimes I'm like, I can't write older than, like, a 12-year-old vocabulary. And not saying that 12-year-olds don't have great vocabulary. And in some ways, J.K. Rowling was really helpful, because she never looked back and said, I can't use this word because it doesn't meet the lexile for this age group.
Right.
Like, and everybody just let her go. So she kind of changed the game a little bit for some of us. But yeah, you know, when you're writing for 7 to 11 or younger, you don't have a lot of room for description. So when you're writing an older novel and you have a lot more words, you have so much more room to describe things. And you probably, you may have an A plot and a small B plot in a chapter book, but you're not going to explore a lot of the other characters kind of outside of that. And you have a lot of room for that. And you're right. You know, you could be going from, my average book is probably 70 pages. And an adult novel could be 300, 400.
Right.
It's a big difference. And I want to push myself a little bit further with some adult ideas I have, see what happens. You know, it's going to be great, though, when my adult character goes, awesome! Yay! Yeah. Explanation point! Yeah.
Yeah, that a little bit. Yeah, we cannot relate to the character. Yeah, the 7-year-olds are like, yay! Yeah, that's
cool.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
But it's interesting. I wonder if having written for 7-year-olds helps also with the movie tie-ins, because they're, like you're saying, you have so little words in a screenplay. So in a way, your mind is almost already there. And then having written for history, you're already also writing in a way that you're bound by certain, I guess you could say, rules of the universe, because you can't do certain things when you're in the time of Abraham Lincoln or whoever else, you know, the Wright brothers, whoever you're writing about. So I wonder if that does help.
That's like very perceptive, and I would want to think more about that. I mean, in some ways, you're bound in any novel by your character, whoever your point of view is.
Right.
Bound,
yeah, that's true.
By the rules of the world.
Right. Right.
You know, and depending on how small that world is, like, that's it. It's school-based, whatever. It's in the school. Like, the kid, the characters, the teachers, like...
Yeah, it's true.
But, yeah, that's a super interesting thing to think about a little bit more. Sometimes I look at something like George Lucas, and I think, there has got to be some degree of madness there. Like, a little bit, because all the characters and all the things that happen in a world that is that size
is
different than when I'm writing something that takes place, I don't know, at some elementary school.
Right.
Like it's a totally different structure and a mindset and like a way that your brain has to function. So a little bit more like he's the conductor of a much larger orchestra than I am.
Yeah, that's a good description for it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that there's a little bit of madness to that, too. Like a good conductor that can hear all the different parts of an orchestra, right?
Right.
I just work with, like, a band.
Or one set of instruments, all. Yeah. You're working, like, the one set of the wind section, maybe, yeah.
That's right. And then I guess you could say, like, now that we're doing this, I guess you could say, like, the YA novel adds a few more, you know, sections to the orchestra.
Yeah.
And then as you get bigger and bigger, like, until you have, like, this full-on, huge, enormous Star Wars orchestra.
Right. An orchestra is definitely, that is, yeah. I don't know how anyone keeps track of all the characters in those kinds of universes. Even sometimes when I'm reading those and just like, am I supposed to remember who all these people are?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah.
I'm going back to YA. There's much less people there to keep track of. Yeah.
And we all define our own world. Like, you can go as big as you want. Go as big and bold as you want. But, you know, there has to be continuity to it as well. And I tend to think smaller.
Yeah, that's true.
And use small words. So.
Hey, it, you know, if it's working, then...
it's totally working for me right now.
Thank God.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, exclamation point.
At least three.
So, I also saw, you have the Spirit books that you have, that it's a Netflix series. What came, do the books come first, or the Netflix series came first on that one?
I love writing those. I have loved writing them. One, my husband has horses, and we've now just moved to a ranch where we have 4 horses, right?
Wow.
And horses are not my thing at all. They're totally his thing. But the Spirit books allow me into that world. Often what I've done with them, almost entirely, is the show came first, the show was on, they wanted these books to tie into the show. But they would have me write things between the episodes. So they would say, you know, we're going to send you 5 episodes and come up with something that kind of happens between them.
Oh,
nice. You can choose, like, between 1 and 2, between 3 and 4, like, I don't know, do you want winter? Like, whatever.
Right.
But pick something in between. And so for me, it's different than some houses, like, hand you a, like, this is what we want. I mean, most everybody has some freedom in what they're giving you. But for Spirit, it was just a ton of freedom. Like, watch these episodes and then choose what you want.
Wow.
And normally I would send maybe 3 or 4 ideas and say, you know, I could go this route or I could go this route. And then they'd be like, okay, we like number 2. And then I'd be like, great, I'm going to send you like a 5-page outline. And then they'll go over that and they'll be like, we like this and we don't like that. And so I would get to work with them, and I love the collaboration. Like, a collaborative process is so fabulous for me. I just love that so much. Which is another thing about me, right? Which is why this works for me.
Right.
Again, it's not like working on a book by yourself, even with your writing group. Now you're like part of a process. So that's kind of how the Spirit stuff came about. And again, it's all these editors that you meet. The editor on the Spirit stuff was my editor on Batman the Dark Knight.
Ah.
She had then moved to Little Brown.
Right.
So, you know, how many years later, 15 years later, like, I'm back in it with her at a whole different house with a totally different kind of project.
Right. Wow.
Super exciting to, like, get tied back in together.
Right.
It's happened to me several times.
That's great. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
One more thing. We're actually... there's so much. We could talk forever. I just watching the time though.
Call
but,
me back anytime.
Yeah, yay. when you're just when you're writing, especially for kids' books, the 7 to 11 year old, are you thinking, hey, I just want to write something that's going to be fun, or do you think like, oh, I have to make sure there's a lesson learned here, oh, I have to make sure they're going to get something out of it, or is it just about, you know, let's have a good time right now?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I think that when Rhodey and I started with Blast of the Past, we thought, oh, we are going to be, like, go-to for historical fiction.
Right.
Anybody who's doing historical fiction is going to be like, you guys are the expert. Like, that's going to be our tent peg.
Yeah.
Obviously, that didn't happen. But characters grow. And maybe this is part of my problem with picture books, right, is that you have 700 words or less to get a character to grow.
Yes, right.
In any novel... no matter how short or long it is, the character, something needs to change and grow. So looking at these 7 to 11, yeah, they're super fun, but even something silly like, I have no idea. Even like a Nancy Drew, right? The characters learn something along the way. And then they solve the mystery. Or in the Spirit books, those kids always like have a little bit of growth at the end. You know, it might
right.
be a setback, or it might be temporary. It might be the same growth they have in the next one.
Right.
Depending
right.
on how many novels are in the series, it could be super similar.
Right.
But by the end of my novel, you want to feel like the characters have gained something and moved, even if it's like incrementally from where they were before. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know if you have, I just thought about this right now. I don't know if you have a number. Do you know how many is the most books you ever wrote in 1 year, or novels that you ever, even manuscripts, like original drafts that you had to do in 1 year? Do you know what your all time number is?
So there, I mean, there is a process to it. So, I mean, and I'm fast, and that's part of why I can do this work also, is that I can write really fast. But I'd like to remind everybody, this is my job. Like, I'm not trying to do what so many other writers do, which is to juggle 3 babies and a full-time job and, like
right.
other things, you know.
Right.
Even when I had little kids, like, this was my job. And so the kids would go to school, and I would write from 8 to 3, and that was my job. And then I go pick them up, and like, then I was done. So I have now forgotten the question, I'm sure.
Oh, you were talking about that you're a fast writer, and I was asking how many you've written. Yeah.
How many books I read a year.
Yeah.
So it really depends. When I started this way back, I was like, if I got 1 book a year, I would be so psyched. Like,
yeah.
that would be, but now it tends to be a lot more. I also want to remind you, like, the way the publishing world works is it could be a year. So this last week I had 2 books published.
Wow.
I had a biography of Amelia Earhart with Callisto, which just came out last week,
yeah,
which
right.
I loved yeah. writing. And I also had a new Spirit book, which I also loved. But the Spirit book I probably wrote, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 months ago. The Callisto book I maybe wrote 6 months ago. Maybe
right.
I even wrote the Spirit book longer. Maybe
right.
a year on that Spirit book. So depending on the houses, right? So I can write, I don't know, how fast do I write? Probably a couple of months for a book. If I do 6 books a year, that would be amazing. That's not always what happens.
Wow.
I mean, like two years ago, I had a horrible year. I'm not even sure I had one.
Wow.
And my agent was like, wow, the year before that, like, you produced a ton of books. But, you know, the publishers are consolidating. A lot of the licensed properties get cut because, you know, those get first on the chopping block.
Yeah.
So unless they know that they're going to make a lot of money. So, you know, it is really kind of as it goes. And I will kind of end this part with what I started with, which is every 3 months I send out resumes. Every 3 months. Even if I'm in the middle of a project, because I'd like to try and line up something else. I touch base with the editors. I see how everybody's doing. I kind of update on me. I send a new resume. I let everybody like know like I'm going to be available. You want to be that person that they think of. And honestly, I will say the other thing about my career is it pays to be nice, to be on time, to have clean manuscripts.
Yeah.
You know, all those things. Like, you don't want to give anybody a reason to go to the next person. And there are tons of other people who would be thrilled to do what I do.
Right.
Tons of people. Everybody, like, you know, would be thrilled.
Exactly.
And so you want to be that person that they think of. And so you, like me at least, I cultivate that. I hear stories about writers who are like prima donnas or divas. And I'm like, wow, good for you. But that's so not where I am.
Right.
Because I want to be a good person. And I want them to think of me like that. And I want them to think of me as a good writer and somebody they can trust, which I hope I've done.
Amen. Is that anything to say after that?
Just... how many? I have no idea. I mean, maybe on a good year, it could be six. It could be more. If I've got like I did two short stories for Lego last year. Like, those are short. But, you know, you can add them up though, right?
Right.
My little stories for Lego. Awesome.
It's so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So I shoot for one and I'm super happy to have more.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, cool, 3 exclamation points. Cool. Okay, this is against my better judgment, but I have to wrap up now because we're going a little bit over. But as I always ask at the end, if you fill in the blank of, I love it when either writers, publishers, any book sort of person does X, and I really wish they wouldn't. I really can't stand when they do X. Can you fill in the blank on those?
Yeah. I thought about this. I really love it when writers prop each other up. Look at where I am. Had Robin Glasser not given my name to HarperCollins, it wouldn't have happened.
Right?
So I totally believe in the pay it forward. I think we need to be helping each other. I think we need to show some love to each other, provide direction, provide contacts. You know what? If my agent turns somebody down, that's on her. I have no problem recommending to somebody who I think would be a good fit to send their stuff to her.
Right.
The positive is when writers help each other. And the second half is, what don't I like? I don't like it when writers backstab each other or talk bad about each other. I think that we all deserve to be here. I think there's tons of room for anybody who wants to do it. I think it's so much work. It's so much work.
Yeah.
I want us to support each other. It's even for me, it's not about like, oh my gosh, what if like Joe gets the movie novel that I wanted?
Right.
And you know what? Good job, Joe. You go. I'll get the next one.
Right.
Like, it's okay. And I think that there just needs to be a lot more of that kind of positive energy in our experiences. I feel like we can get really, we can say, oh, it's a small market, so it can only hold so many people. That's not true. Good writing will float. And as long as we work on our craft and are nice to each other, it'll be okay.
I love it. I agree. I got it. Thank you so much for coming on. It's such a pleasure to have you and to speak with you. And it's been great. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it. I like that you pushed me to think about some things too. So that's really good. I'm going to go have some conversations with some writers.
Awesome.
The things I talked about today.
Oh My Word podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Clutching Basement Dwellers at Oh My Word. Today's bonus episode featured author Stacia Deutsch. Please check the episode notes to see more about her and for her website. Follow Oh My Word podcast on Instagram for updates to see what we're up to. Or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.